Hello, everybody. I'm Matt Hartman, also known as the Race Nerd. And for those of you know, I do a little podcast here on CKCC Online called the Race Nerd Podcast, which is currently on hiatus. We'll be back in May, just in time for probably the greatest weekend in auto racing with the Grand Prix of Monaco. The Indianapolis 500 and the Coca-Cola 600 Memorial Day weekend. So we're going to cover everything leading up to that. But I'm going to do something a little different today. I'm going to, kind of get my feet back into podcasting a little bit. It's been almost a year since I've done a show. But I want to talk about something that, much like the Indianapolis 500, the Daytona 500, it's one of those days, now actually a full weekend, that I truly enjoy, truly sit down, truly anticipate all year for. I'm going to talk WrestleMania. Because growing up, there were, outside of auto racing, there were certain things I loved, like baseball. Big baseball fan, have lots of opinions on the sport. Obviously, that and growing up in the 80s and being a teenager in the 90s, it was certainly pro wrestling, when pro wrestling was at its hottest. And every year I kind of tune in for WrestleMania, whether I watch it live on Peacock or whether I follow along with it. For a little while, I kind of tuned out on pro wrestling as I got older. But man, it's gotten cool again. Actually, it's been getting cool for a little while now. But man, oh man. So WrestleMania, the 2-day event in Philly, at Lincoln Financial Field at the Link there, home of the Philadelphia Eagles. And I was just, it's kind of at its wheelhouse as the WWE. Obviously started off as a Northeastern company before really growing to where they became a worldwide phenomenon, And this was something that was this event, just there was just so much. And this was the first time that Philly had hosted a WrestleMania since WrestleMania 15 back in 1999, when wrestling was probably at that period was at its hottest. And I dare say even hotter than it was in the 80s when Hulk Hogan and many others like Macho Man and Roddy Piper were leading that whole thing. So let me go through WrestleMania and I'll give my thoughts on this, because there was a lot of other stuff that came out over the week, that week leading into WrestleMania and the week after WrestleMania, between CM Punk being on the MMA hour, and the response to that from AEW and Tony Khan. And I'm not gonna get into that right now because, I mean, it kind of takes the luster off WrestleMania and what I wanted to do. But I just wanted to go through this because I watched both nights. I think I maybe missed two matches out of it all. On the initial weekend, I did go back and rewatch them. But first, we start off with night one, which was Saturday. And they start off pretty big. Rhea Ripley, and Becky Lynch battling for the Women's World title. Rhea picks up the win over Becky. So Mommy picks up the win over the man. I thought this was pretty good. Was it the women's match that was, super excited to see. These are two of the most popular women in the WWE, and Rhea, even though she plays a face, I mean, you could tell that that she is over like Rover, and Becky, who was part of that historic WrestleMania main event just a few years ago with Charlotte Flair and Ronda Rousey. She's still popular as ever, but I think this one was the right call. Rhea Ripley retains, and she's kind of filling that gap that was left when Sasha Banks left WWE. She's kind of found herself as that fourth horsewoman of the WWE. The horsewomen, which was Charlotte, Becky, Bailey, who we would see on night two, and Sasha. And I think that this that she fits in with them. She's really great for the women's division. She's super over, even though she is a heel. So I was excited. I was happy for that. Next match on night two was the six-pack tag team ladder match, where the Judgment Day of Finn Balor and Damian Priest would put both their SmackDown and Raw titles on the line against the team of Awesome Truth, Miz and R-Truth, DIY, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, multi-time champions, The New Day, the team of the New Catch Republic, which is Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate, and A-Town Down Under, this team of Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. And this one, I will say, I kind of was like, all right, we've done all these ladder matches and all at WrestleMania. I mean, we had TLC matches, we had the original ladder match, way back at what, WrestleMania 10, between Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon. So I'm like, all right, we've seen these before, but this was certainly an entertaining match, in a large part to some of the participants. First off, the team that I really did not expect to pull off a major win here, A-Town Down Under, the Austin Theory, Grayson Waller team, picks up the SmackDown women, the SmackDown tag team title, not the SmackDown women's title, but they picked it up. And there's a great spot where Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate throw Grayson Waller through a ladder that was used as a bridge outside the ring between the edge of the ring and the announce table. And that looked like it hurt. I mean, there were so many good spots in here. Typical stuff you'd see out of Kofi and Xavier with the New Day. Really dug, by the way, Kofi and Xavier's outfits for this, playing into Philadelphia and being paying tribute to the favorite son of Philadelphia, one Rocky Balboa. Fictional favorite son, I should say. But I thought that was really cool, especially Xavier Woods playing into his previous character, known as Consequences Creed back when he was in TNA. But in the end, you had the Judgment Day and Awesome Truth, Miz and R-Truth going through there, and it was great to see R-Truth retrieve the Raw tag team titles for him and Miz, in what was their first tag team championship together. And I was really happy because I didn't realize at the time that was R-Truth's first ever win at WrestleMania, and he's been off and on with the WWE for over 20 years, so I mean, that was really, really cool to see. A lot of great spots in there, a lot of comic spots, especially with R-Truth trying to tag in to the Miz, not realizing it's a ladder match, not a straight up tag team match. So I got a laugh out of that. But I was really happy to see that and to see them breaking up the tag team title, separating them from having singular champions in the Judgment Day. And also what I didn't realize is they're kind of playing their cards for later on WrestleMania weekend, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. Next match was the LWO with Rey Mysterio and I won't say a full-blown member, but Andrade, who has returned to WWE after leaving the company for AEW and kind of getting stuck in that mess over there. But they were accompanied by Carlito and Cruz del Toro and Joaquin Wilde and Selena Vega, who I'm always happy to see Selena on TV because she's freaking awesome. But they defeat Santos Escobar, a former member of the NWO and leader of his little group. And I don't remember the name, but him and Dominic Mysterio, doing something outside the Judgment Day. He's still a member of the Judgment Day, but just that rivalry with his father. But you had they were accompanied obviously by Angel Garza and Humberto and Electra Lopez. But this was a, I'm not gonna say a fun match, but it had a lot of great spots. So sorry about that, just bumped into something behind me. But it had a lot of great spots, like Andrade putting Rey on his shoulders as they're on the ropes, and doing a crossbody with Rey on his shoulders to the outside, taking out Phantasma, the Phantasma stable. Another great spot is where Carlito and Cruz launch Joaquin Wilde onto Angel and Humberto on the ramp, just kind of using the ropes as a slingshot. But ultimately, the match ends with Dominic going outside to grab a chair. He's attacked by two giant luchadors in green and silver masks that end up being players from the Philadelphia Eagles and help Mysterio and Andrade win this match. Like I said, it was fun, but it gave me one thing that I really, really want to see going forward. And I love to see a series of matches between Santos Escobar and Andrade. Because to be honest, that really intrigues me. I wasn't a fan of Andrade during his first run, nor his, not so much his NXT run, but his first run with the company and what he was able to do in AEW, because I think he was able to do so much more. But I think that if you're going to make more huge Latin stars, because I mean Rey, let's be honest, I mean I'm surprised Rey is still going at his age. He's got to be in his, I don't know, his 50s now. I want to say, it turns 50 this year. We got Dominic who progresses every week. He gets better and better. But you need somebody to kind of fill that. And I think that with Andrade and Escobar, you really have that, that next big Latin star. And I think that that would really be a boon to the company to kind of really push those two guys. And I think that those two guys, they could have quite a long rivalry. I'm not going to say like an Orton Cena type rivalry, one that always gets all the headlines, but these guys could really put on and steal a show, almost like a Miz and Dolph Ziggler type rivalry, where it's something where it's not like the storyline, but it could really steal some eyes. So I'm looking forward to that. Speaking of rivalry right here, nothing says rivalry like sibling rivalry, as Jey Uso, who had defected out of the Bloodline back in back in last year, leaving his brother Jimmy in, kind of separating the rest of the family, going and doing his thing. But their rivalry is always heated up over who's the better brother, who's, who made who. In this match, I've seen a lot of people not like this. I thought it was good for what it was. Jay wins multiple. I mean, it was a super kick party. But at least it told the story, because that's what these guys are known for. And I think it went over correctly. And obviously their story's not over yet by any means. So we move on to the one match on Saturday that I really wasn't 100% into. It was Bianca Belair and a Naomi, who had returned back at the Royal Rumble, returning to the company, and after being in TNA and leaving when Sasha Banks did on their walkout, she returns to the company, and a debuting Jade Cargill. Now, Jade obviously had been in the Royal Rumble, but this had been her first official match on WWE against Damage Control, Dakota Kai, Asuka, and Kairi Sane. And this, I'm not going to say was the greatest. I mean, it had its spots, certainly had its spots, basically to showcase Jade Cargill. But this, I'm going to say, I mean, I don't think there was anybody bad in the match, but just something was off. I don't know whether it was the pacing or whatever. Now, I'm not a huge fan of Bianca Belair, but I will say, she looked the brightest out of them all. And when you're in a match with Asuka, who is just a beast, that says a lot. So I was super, super excited to, kind of, I don't want to say wait for that match to be over. I mean, it was the shortest match on night one. But man, oh man, did they really put over Jade Cargill? And I think that she, with a little more time on the roster, a little more seasoning with a lot of these veterans, like a Naomi or a Asuka, or even, when Charlotte Flair returns, I think that you have so many great storylines, so many great ways for her to improve. Now, like I said, I just from what I saw of Jade in AEW, I wasn't sold. I know that's, a lot of people are, but I think, she could be one hell of a talent. She reminds me a lot of Camille Brickhouse, who was most recently the longtime NWA Women's Champion. She just has that imposing figure, and I think that that could be really interesting to see where they go with not just Jade, but all six of those women. Next match, and a lot of people, and I tend to agree, that this was the match of night one. Sami Zayn versus Gunther. Gunther, who was on his 666th day as Intercontinental Champion, been there for for almost 2 years. Sammy, who is the ultimate underdog, I felt like he kind of had been just treading water since last year's WrestleMania, where they had the big payoff between him and Kevin Owens versus the Usos after he was kicked out of the Bloodline. I thought that this was, a great way to pay off, and he's going up against the monster known as Gunther. A very, very hard hitting match, very physical. And by the end of it, you're like, oh man, this is gonna be rough. And this certainly lived up to its potential. With Sammy, who just had the absolute crap kicked out of him for most of the match, somehow finding a way to dig deep, and pulling out a Huluva kick, a brainbuster. Man, you don't see those very often nowadays. And a final Huluva kick to put down Gunther. Like I said, this I think was the match of night one. Only leading up to the biggest tag team match in the history of the 4 years of WrestleMania, even bigger than the tag team match at the end of WrestleMania 1 with Hulk Hogan and Jimmy Snuka and Mr. T versus said Paul Orndorff and Paul Orndorff and Roddy Piper. Sorry, I had to think. I'm like, who is Piper's tag team partner? But I forgot. Big Bob Orton had that cast on as usual. I think Bob probably would still be wearing that cast to this day. But the Bloodline and Cody Rhodes, well, the Bloodline of Ro The Rock and Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. With the stakes being if Cody and Seth won, there would be no interference from the Bloodline. But if The Rock and Roman won, it was Bloodline rules, which is anything goes. And this was a decent match, went on a little longer than it should have. But in the end, The Rock rock bottoms and pins Cody, making the storyline of Cody winning that WWE World title so much harder. The story has been planted since Cody's return to the WWE almost 2 years ago. I think that this it was good, but as I said, it went on way, way too long. It was almost 45 minutes, and at the end, he kind of got a little fatigued. Especially knowing that we had night two right around the corner. And I thought this was really good. They did set up a lot of stuff for night two. Obviously, besides the Bloodline rules, you had Seth, kind of getting hurt. You see him tweak his knee and fighting out of that. Although he had a really cool spot where he did the stomp to The Rock. And, as The Rock's just kind of laying there out cold after the stomp, Seth couldn't capitalize on it because he was hurt. He was holding his knee. But kind of foreshadowed a little bit what to expect in night two on so many levels. So let's just jump right into night two. Night two starts off with Drew McIntyre versus Seth Rollins with probably the weirdest entrance I had ever seen with Philadelphia Mummers. Not that Drew's was much better because they played the Rolling Hills of Tyrol, which, if you all know that, that may sound familiar because that is the entrance to one Rowdy Roddy Piper, who I still say was the MVP of the original WrestleMania and a lot of those early years of the Rock and Wrestling connection, because you need to have that Darth Vader to go against Luke Skywalker to make that story mean something. But Drew versus Seth, and on commentary is one Charles Montgomery Punk, a guy who was set to face Rollins at WrestleMania. Legit tore his bicep in his arm or his tricep, and was on commentary. And he really had no dog in this fight. I know that Drew had been really busting his balls for pretty much since then. Drew was still pissed that his win at WrestleMania, where he won the title, was during that COVID era and with no fans in attendance. This was a good match. I mean, it played a lot on the how should I say, on the storylines from night one with Seth and his knee and his back and just being the working man's champion. But in the end, Drew McIntyre picks up the win. But a couple of really quick things, because I forgot to mention it right out the gate. Soon as the bell rang, McIntyre hits Rollins with that Claymore kick, and you're like, oh my God, here we go. This is how Daniel Bryan lost the title to Sheamus at a WrestleMania many years ago. We're going to see that really, really quick match. We didn't. They went for another 10 minutes, 10 and a half minutes. Drew wins, goes over to the announce table, starts talking trash to Punk. Punk doesn't say anything, just kind of, whatever, dude, enjoy your moment. Drew crotch chops him, turns on the table. Punk double leg sweep, knocks Drew down, takes off the arm brace, hits Drew with the arm brace. Then all of a sudden, the Judgment Day's music hits, and you see Punk's eyes light up as he knows what's about to happen. Damian Priest comes to the ring, send your money in the bank, hits Drew with the briefcase, rolls him into the ring. A very dazed Drew McIntyre gets the South of Heaven choke slam. One, two, three. Damian Priest loses that title just as quick as he got it. And Damian Priest is your new world heavyweight champion. CM Punk is just kind of, he does the golf clap and all. It was one of those things, because you know that they are really building towards that Drew McIntyre CM Punk story once Punk is back. And going back to night one, when the Judgment Day lost those tag titles, it was probably the least expected thing in my mind that we would see a cash in on night two. I totally didn't expect it, but it was fun. I thought that was a really cool moment. Next match is Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits, now known as the Pride, taking on the Final Testament, which is the Authors of Pain and Karrion Kross, in a Philadelphia street fight with a special guest referee, Hall of Famer Bubba Ray Dudley, a guy who knows something about street fights in Philadelphia pretty well. This was a wild match. I wasn't 100% into it, and it's nothing on the. I'm not 100% into the Street Profits. Bobby Lashley's kind of. I really don't know. I am warming up to Karrion Kross. I think he's an interesting character, and I think a little more interesting outside the ring. But hey, you got Paul Ellering there, the manager. Longtime manager of the Road Warriors, aka Legion of Doom. And having Scarlett out there really didn't hurt. It was a great spot where they just beat Bobby Lashley and beat him with kendo sticks, drop him face first on the back of a chair. But somehow, little bit of joy between Karrion Kross and Bubba Ray Dudley. Bubba puts on the glasses. You know, when Bubba put on those glasses, that place popped. Because no matter what, you could say Philadelphia, South Philadelphia, all that, it's still within the boundaries of Dudleyville. So seeing Dawkins and Lashley and Montez Ford doing the Dud a lot of the Dudley spots, like getting the tables, the what's up headbutt, that was kind of cool with Bubba directing traffic, telling them how to do the headbutt. That was a fun spot. I mean, it wasn't the worst match of the night, but it was kind of like one of those, kind of let the crowd settle down. Next match was LA Knight versus AJ Styles. Now this feud had been going on. They teased it at the Elim for months. Then, obviously the Elimination Chamber where AJ cost LA Knight a chance to go to WrestleMania to face Seth Rollins. This was good. Obviously, AJ putting over LA Knight. You saw a lot of teases with their respective finishers, the phenomenal forearm, the Pele kick. You saw what I forget what they're calling LA's finisher there, and a Styles clash. I mean, you saw it all. I mean, it was a lot of back and forth. It was a solid match. It was something that you would definitely see on, whether it be a SmackDown or a regular, run-of-the-mill pay-per-view. Wasn't anything spectacular, but AJ got his WrestleMania, LA got his WrestleMania moment, sorry. But it was really good. It was a good solid match. So I was excited for that. Next match was a match I really wasn't excited for. That is Randy Owens. Randy Owens. Jesus, where'd that come from? Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. Randy Owens. That kind of sounds like a country star. Taking on Logan Paul with his stupid Prime Bottle sidekick of some kind of Twitch streamer. I show speed in a triple threat match for the U.S. title. It was. There were a lot of fun spots, like obviously Orton and Owens just beating the ever-loving crap out of Logan Paul for the good opening of the match. Them comparing, moves as they just beat on Logan Paul. And then they finally turn and, decide, hey, let's try beating up on each other for once. Great spot with I Show Speed. Getting ripped out of the Prime Bottle as he was the mascot there, and taking a RKO onto the announce table. Man, I hate to be I know those announce tables, are set to fall apart, but man, oh man, it seems like it's like every match. But I was. It certainly had its ups and downs with this one. Logan Paul retains the U.S. title. I'm gonna say he's very gifted athletically, but I still don't like Logan Paul. Not even as a character, which is what you want a wrestler. I just don't like Logan Paul as a person. After all of his YouTube stuff, I'd seen some of it because I do have kids, after all, and he's one of those people who's, you just want to see get punched in the face, and I know his brother is probably going to get that very soon with that fight between him and Mike Tyson. See Jake Paul get beaten, but Logan, I will say, hats off to him because that was. He definitely had his a really cool moment there. Next match was the other women's match. You had Rhea and Becky starting off WrestleMania. The penultimate match for WrestleMania was Bayley versus Io Sky. for the WWE Women's Championship. Bayley, who was for a long time, I want to say that forgotten horsewoman, as Sasha and Charlotte and Becky really, they really hit that big time. But Bayley was just kind of that, that fourth one. She was kind of like the, if I were to equate them to the original horsewomen, the original horsemen, she was kind of, oh man, probably the only. She was there. I mean, she wasn't like the star, like the Ric Flair type or the Enforcer, which, really was what Becky seemed to be, that Arn Anderson role. And she wasn't flashy like and temperamental like Tully was, which was Sasha. But Bayley was just kind of like that only spot or that rotating spot, which would either be, Barry Windham, who had a really cool moment at the Hall of Fame. And oh man. Anyway, but Bayley facing off, after winning the Royal Rumble, facing off against Io Sky, one of her former compatriots in Damage Control, as Becky was Bayley was the one that brought Judgment Day together, her, Io, and Dakota Kai, and eventually was ousted from the group once Io won the world title. I thought this was great. It gave Bayley her WrestleMania moment. Now all four of the original horsewomen have won that title at WrestleMania, and I thought this was really, really cool. It was a solid match. Got to see some of the old throwbacks, like the back, like the belly to belly suplex and whatnot. And I think this is a great win for the role model, Bayley, and it set up for, it didn't. It wasn't going to overshadow the final match of the night. The final match of the night was the culmination of a 2-year-long story for Cody Rhodes, and what, a 4-year-long story for Roman Reigns, as Cody enters the undisputed WWE Universal Championship match with Bloodline rules against Roman Reigns, who certainly is up there as one of the longest winning, the longest retaining champions, for many reasons, because, well, some of them due to Bloodline help. But this was the match everybody came to see, and it did not disappoint. Cody and Roman going at it, and I mean, they fought all over the place, the ramp, the crowd, the ring, a lot of spears, a lot of reversals, a lot of everything. Cody's finally starting to get the upper hand on Roman. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, super kick, Jimmy Uso, comes out. They double team on Cody. The equalizer comes out for Cody, which is Jimmy's brother Jay. They fight, wicked spear right off the side of the ramp onto some tables by Jay. Neutralizes both of them. All right, now we have an even playing field. Not even so anymore, as Solo Sikoa comes out, spikes Cody with that Samoan spike. Then the Samoan spike spear combo doesn't take Cody down, and then coming out for Cody out of nowhere. And this was what was really cool. This tied into a storyline from last year, as Solo was the guy that took out John Cena, when really John Cena went off to go do a couple of movies and season 2 of Peacemaker. But Cena comes out, takes out Solo, and knocks him to the outside. Hits an attitude adjustment out there. Hits an attitude adjustment on Roman. Let's not forget they had a little bit of a beef some years back. only for the final boss to come out, The Rock. And man, they did the little head turn to the crowd, looking at the crowd, looking at each other there with their standoff before The Rock rock bottoms them. Cena's neutralized. The Rock sees a prone Cody Rhodes in the ring, takes off that weight belt with Mama Rhodes' name on it. It's getting ready to whip him. Then all of a sudden, you hear that Sierra. Oh, that Sierra Echo Delta Shield music come out. People were popping. They thought it would be Dean Ambrose making his return to the WWE. No. It was Seth Rollins holding his promise to Cody that he would be his shield against the Bloodline. Seth Rollins, back in full shield gear, comes to the ring, gets in the ring, automatically cut off by Roman Reigns, taken to the outside. And as The Rock is ready to have his way with Cody Rhodes, pretty much about to put the stamp on this for the Bloodline, the bell dongs, lights go out. Rock is anticipating the ramp, lights come up. Behind him is none other than the Phenom, the American Badass, the Undertaker, delivering a chokeslam to The Rock. Lights go back out again. Seth's slowly fighting his way into the ring. Cody is in, trying to climb up on the ropes. Both of them are in there. Roman with a chair, deciding on who to hit. Takes out Seth the same way Seth took him out and ended the Bloodline. Well, ended the Shield, and Cody was able to take out Roman 1-2-3. Cody Rhodes finishes the story, becomes the first Rhodes to be the WWE Championship, be champion. And man, oh man, I will say there was so much going on in this match. The last 10 minutes alone were amazing. So many great nostalgia calls, and so many tips to a lot of storylines. Obviously, Jimmy and Jay, which happened earlier that night, that sibling rivalry, Solo and Cena, because Solo was the one who, in storyline, put Cena on the shelf with that devastating Samoan spike. Then Rock and Cena, God, because they had those back-to-back WrestleManias, and and also their rivalry probably gave us one of the most played and best moments in WWE. It was in part due to the pipe bomb, where CM Punk calls out The Rock and John Cena, and how they get that WrestleMania spot. And that was certainly something shooting from the hip, and that wasn't lost on me, because this was CM Punk's first WrestleMania since 2013. Granted, he was on the shelf for this one, but did participate. But I do appreciate that they did the little look at each other, turn to the crowd, look at each other again, turn to the crowd. Kind of like that surreal moment where The Rock and Hulk Hogan faced off many, many years ago at WrestleMania. And you had that. Then you had, obviously, I think probably the storyline going forward is Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. A match that we've seen teased many times. I know they've faced each other, off and on since the split of the Shield. But I think that this is going to be the storyline for Roman. as he's even hinted at it in promos, when cutting promos on Cody, that he can't trust Seth Rollins, that Seth stabbed him in the back, hitting him with a chair, taking him out and breaking up the Shield and everything like that. And just you finally had that moment. Now I know they faced it was a Survivor Series or a Royal Rumble one year, where both of them playing heels and Seth really trying to get into the head of Roman by coming out to the old Shield entrance and really playing mind games. And that was the first match that I believe Roman did not unequivocally win. That one, I believe, ended in a no contest or a double DQ or something. But just the fact that Roman could not get over, he had that shot on Cody and decided to take out Seth instead, leading f to him losing that WWE Championship. I think that's the storyline going forward. And we'll have to see, because I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of implications for the Bloodline going forward. But I thought this was an amazing WrestleMania. The payoff at the end was well worth it, well worth 2 years in the storyline. And I'm excited for what'll happen the rest of the year. You know, it kind of suckered me back into being a fan. It's why I fell in love with pro wrestling as a kid. Why my brothers did, and to me, this was probably from top to bottom one of the best WrestleManias I'd seen. You know, whether it's a one-day WrestleMania or a two-day extravaganza, I think that this was great. Anyway, I talked way too much about pro wrestling. Like I said, I will be back in just a few weeks to kind of re-energized for the Race Nerd podcast. I just wanted to kind of do something a little out of the box with this episode, kind of not just get my feet wet, but just talk about something, because when you're passionate about something, you want to talk about it. And I was certainly passionate about this WrestleMania. So until next time, I'm Matt Hardman, and I will see you at the track.